Welcome back to Embracing Your Mortality podcast with me, author Sue Brain. On the first day of the month, I post an interview with someone who's inspiring us to live more consciously for a better world. And my goodness me, we need all the help we can get these days. This is why I'm so thrilled that my New Year's Day guest for 2024 is neuropsychiatrist Dr. Peter Fenwick. I was Peter's honorary researcher into one of the first studies that looked at how end-of-life experiences might teach us about the transpersonal process of dying. Peter is now 89 and engaged in his own dying process, and what he has to say about it is utterly uplifting and insightful. So, Peter, I am absolutely delighted that we're together doing this recording, because it's been a while since we actually had a chat. And I know that you did a wonderful interview for me for the podcast about a couple of years ago now. But the reason I'm so keen to talk to you today is because I know that you've been quite ill recently, and it just seemed a wonderful opportunity to talk to you about what that's been like for you and where you feel that you are now on your journey. So when you became ill, what happened for you?
Nothing.
Nothing? What do you mean by nothing?
I wasn't there.
What does that mean?
I simply no memory of it at all. I remember being taken by the ambulance to King's. I don't remember going into King's. I have a brief flash of memory in King's, and then a gap of about 2, 3, 4 days. And then my memory starts again.
And do you feel like something was happening for you or to you when you were that ill?
No, it's a blank. I just can't get anything back from that period. But in fact, that led to the hospital discovering that I have cancer, that I have a colonic cancer. And so I said they could do an operation and remove it, but I'd be worse if they did that. So I said, okay, I'll live with my cancer. It and I will become good friends. And I don't know, I probably got 2, 3 years, I think, before I die.
Has that sort of focused you more on the journey of the whole dying process? Do you feel like that you're learning more about this or more about yourself?
Well, certainly it focused my attention on the dying process, because I had to do that. I had to make a decision with the family whether in fact we went for the operation, had it moved or not. We're all in agreement. There's no point. I mean, I'm 80, nearly 89 now. That's a nice lot of life. And so what do? Every time we wake up in the morning and our feet touch the ground, we're grateful, enormously grateful for the fact that we've had this life. Yeah, it's a fantastic planet to be on.
Yeah, and you talk a lot about consciousness in your books and how you've, in the work that you've done about end of life and the whole dying process. And I'm just curious about how you're experiencing now that you are consciously entering the journey of dying. Do you feel that you are separating out more from the sort of the duality of life and becoming more present with what consciousness means to you?
I'm not sure about that, but I've had one or two lectures I've had to give on consciousness. So that's meant I've had to look up the whole scientific and spiritual arguments for consciousness. And so, yeah, I'm really quite clear on that.
The fact that consciousness is more present for you now, or just the fact you're more conscious of the whole concept of consciousness?
I suppose it must be in 2022, there was a call by the Bigelow Foundation for papers concerning is the life after death? And if you wrote a really good paper, you get $500,000, then $250 for a second, and $100,000 for a third. And then it went on down for another seven. And then there was a special category who had written extremely good papers, but they weren't in fact awarded the topmost prizes. Now, our paper, which I put in with Martin, you must have a BBC producer, and Pier Francesco, who is a very bright Italian scientist, and Vasilios, another physicist from Belgium, we all put our paper in, and it won in this last category, which was very nice. So we were given $20,000. Also, I didn't keep the whole lot for myself.
So what did you do with, when you put the paper in, what did you do with that afterwards?
What I did with it was have a look through all the submissions, and it's absolutely clear, we never die. So if you say to me, are you going to die? Hello, Casper. Don't knock the computer over. I'm sorry about this. For your listeners,
come on. Yeah, you've got a lovely cat.
There you are, Casper.
Yeah.
There's Casper.
Oh, lovely.
Because there is so much evidence that consciousness continues after death, then the whole continuation process becomes enormously important. And even more, if it continues after death, what is after death like? Is the Grim Reaper there? No, he's not. Do you realize that no Grim Reaper has ever been seen? Don't you like that guy with the scythe? Well, he's not around.
I'm just curious about, you said there's lots of evidence. What for you is the biggest evidence that life continues after death, or consciousness continues after death?
Yeah, don't say life, because that adds another dimension. Say consciousness continues after death. Mm. Well, like all these things, it is in fact an adding up of the factors. But I think what we'll do is we'll go straight to what the dying are going to experience. And what they're going to experience is, as they come up to death, I've got some lovely stories of the actual death process itself. It's okay. There are two things. You must be very relaxed about it as you're actually dying. You may not be afraid, and you must not resist it. And worst of all, you must not say, I'm not going, because you're going to anyway.
Help, is it really?
Yes. So go with the process. And the process itself is absolutely wonderful. What happens is that the body dies. Mm. Well, you don't want it anyway. Who's going to want my old body now?
Do you feel that because of all you've done, all the work you've done, that it's helping you in your own dying process? And I'm just curious if you feel like you're withdrawing from reality more and more. What's happening for you with that?
No, it's no need to withdraw from reality. You can be absolutely right in the room up to the moment that you separate. Supposing that what one of our death experience stories is of a person who was dying, and the people in the room saw a phosphorescent glow and light is so important. It tends to fill the room of the dying, but don't be surprised. Also, the dying will meet friends, most of whom have died. Sometimes, in about 15% of cases, they'll see people who are still living, but on the whole, it's going to be friends of yours who died. They're going to come and collect you. You're not alone. So understand that. And that's one of the most important things. You're not alone, and you
Peter, do you feel in your own process that you're beginning to connect with, you know, friends who have died or family who've died, that you'd like them to come and collect you? Or are you just...
No, particularly. I know they're going to come anyway. There's not much I can do about it.
So whatever.
Yes.
So I'm just...
All looked after.
Yeah, I think that's it, isn't it? Do you, I mean, when you think about death, do you feel afraid of it, or do you feel, are you, is there any part of you that's nervous about it? Or
absolutely not. Going to be a fantastic experience, because you are going, you're progressing. Your body dies, I don't want it, but consciousness doesn't. And it's consciousness which goes on, and that's really important.
And when you talk about the word consciousness, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, it's a very, very, very good question. It pins your interviewee to the wall. What I mean by consciousness is the personal sense of I. So it's a personal sense of I, and we've all got a personal sense of I. And as we die, this personal sense of I apparently does not change. Okay, so what's my data? My data is talking to people who've died. Oh, come on, you can't talk to people who've died. They're dead. Yes, you can. And in fact, if you look at the medium data, mediums from the last century, loads of medium data. Oh, it's all rubbish, says the reductionist scientist. No, it's not. And what is coming out more and more now is that a lot of the data which has been rubbished as doesn't fit into the reductionist framework is in fact perfectly okay. What is reductionism? Reductionism is everything is made of things, and it's a system which in fact is generated by the brain for you. When you die, the brain dies, and so does your reductionist science. Rubbish. They haven't looked at the data. The whole thing is now data-driven. There is tons of data.
It's interesting because the Buddhist belief, as far as I can understand, I'm not a signed up Buddhist, but I do love their belief system, is that this sort of stream of consciousness does continue after death, but the I, the me, dies. So Sue Brain, Peter Fenwick will die at the moment of death, but this other process of consciousness, which I never quite understand what it is, continues. And that's one area. And the other area which completely flummoxes me is, as you're talking about, is the mediums where people do, if you go and see a medium, I've seen many, they bring evidence that the person who's died, they can bring evidence, and it's compelling evidence. And that seems to be different from consciousness. And I'm curious about that.
Yeah. I like the curiosity, and I think it's right to be curious. In fact, you're not clear enough in your thinking, if I may say so.
Please do.
The body dies. Sue Brain dies. It will not be there anymore. Just like when you came down from the plane and you thought that you were going to crash, that's exactly it, and you will die. Now, consciousness, the internal personal sense of I goes on. And if you look at the experiences of the dying, one of the major things is light. Light. Got a lovely one experience from a mother with her child in hospital. The child died. Light started to surround the bed, so that she drew the curtains. And the whole area within the curtains was filled with the light as the person died. Got another very nice one. This one actually it's quite an important one for my wife, because it concerns her mother in my mother-in-law, who wasn't terribly sure that she wanted a son-in-law who's interested in death. But anyway, one of the stories we got was that the niece, it's the aunt who's dying, the niece wakes up and there is light flooding into the room. Keep light is a very strong motif. She goes into the corridor and the light there is even stronger, and she sees it's flooding out of her aunt's bedroom. And her aunt, in fact, is in the process of dying. And when she goes in there, the whole room is filled with light. And I told this story to my mother-in-law, and she knew the person. And so she said, well, if anybody would have an experience like this, she probably would, because she's a very spiritual person. So I got some goody stars there.
Do you think you have to be spiritual to have an experience at the end of life?
No, absolutely not. And I cut you off on that because I knew that's what you were going to ask. No, you don't. You absolutely do not. And it's very important, this. You may have deep spiritual experiences, and you certainly should have deep spiritual experiences before, but you don't have to be spiritual. No, the dying process is looked after. Your consciousness, your sense of I will separate from the body. It will, in fact, then go on its travel. And what happens to it is usually there are loads of people around you. What do I mean by that? I'm saying that there are, in fact, spiritual figures sometimes, or dead relatives, who come to greet you. Mm. So you just leave with them.
So just help yourself. But I mean, I know a lot of people have these very amazing experiences at the end of life, but also a lot of people don't.
Absolutely.
A lot of people really struggle around that. So just want you to say something a little bit about that, the struggle with death.
There is no struggle with death, and don't do it. If you find yourself being frightened, I think probably you can go to the Bigelow Papers. If you're somebody who likes some evidence, and just read these essays, 27 very good essays. In those essays, you will see that the evidence for a continuation of consciousness is very good. Now, I was very lucky, because in the early 1980s, there was a film showing glimpses of death. And I knew the producer, and he asked me to commentate on it, which I did. And we got 2,000 letters, Sue. 2,000 letters. These were all experiences. Do you remember letters? They're the things that you take into paper. So we got 2,000 of those. And so, in fact, this gave us a very, very good database and proper understanding of what the death process is and what happens as you die.
There's something that I'm also curious about, because, I mean, we're putting aside people who die suddenly, we'll put them aside. But if for the actual dying process, it can take a long time. And I wonder if this process is a preparation. There's something that's going on inside us that is preparing us for letting go, let's put it that way. And I wondered what you would say about that.
One of the factors which has come out is that there is culture, the effects of culture on you. In some cultures, you will go through a process which the culture says you have to do to prepare you for death. Let's take America. About 25% of people see religious figures. But I have a palliative care physician in the south of North America, right down in the Bible Belt. They all see religious figures. So very, very much culture driven.
I'm just in wondering India, about. I'm just wondering about this. There is a process to the dying process. It's elongated.
This is what we're talking about.
And do you feel like we're getting unconsciously that we are, that the dying process enables us to prepare to let go?
Again, a lot depends on your culture as to how much you do that and as to how much you yourself are prepared to look at the data. You see, most people, would you go up to a friend of yours, Sue, at a cocktail party and say, "Hello, I'm Sue Brain, the famous podcaster. Now tell me, where are you going to get buried? And have you decided on what sort of funeral you have?" Person will immediately say, "Very nice meeting you, Mrs. Brain." And that we don't talk about it. We don't like it. We're afraid of it. But fortunately now, with the data that's coming out, it's much more understandable, and we're beginning to tolerate it much better. But we tolerate it better if there is cultural support for it.
Which I think it is changing. I do think there is a lot changing in our culture about death and dying, with the festivals and the death cafes and, you know, people like you providing amazing books and, you know, support to an evidence about life after death. But there's something I want to go back to you personally about, because at one point when you just come out of hospital, I think you talked about this sense of taking off a coat or putting on a coat. And I was curious about what that meant to you. Is the death for you is like taking off one coat and putting on another. Is that right?
That's correct. And the coat you take off is the body. You don't want it. It's old and haggard. What you want is to go on with the personal sense of I that you are, that you know yourself to be.
Do you feel like this sense of I is eternal?
Yes. Oh, yes. And now we come on to a very different part of the interview, because we're starting to talk about what the structure of the world is. And this little doubt from the accounts we've got that it's very much eternal. In fact, I have some nice clips from people, mainly people who have had near-death experiences. So they've been able to gather a lot of information in that state, that there's only one thing, just the universe. A little bit of it comes off as Sue Brain. She does her podcasts. She goes back again and dies, but she just joined the whole.
So it's about the personal sense of I is eternal, because it rejoins the whole of the universe.
Absolutely.
That's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. I've got a lovely one. I don't know if you remember the Medici Quartet and Paul Robertson, who was the lead violinist. In fact, he's the lead of the quartet. He had an operation for repair of his aorta. And in the operation, when his brain was cooled and everything. So, of course, if I was a good reductionist scientist, I'd say he couldn't experience anything. Paul had this wonderful experience of shedding himself gladly and willingly to join the universe. And this is the quality of it. Mm. And when he died, he very kindly, at the moment of death, said to his wife, "I wasn't there, tell Peter Fenwick that we know it all." he's getting back to that. And
that's so wonderful.
While I'm on stories for you, one of the ones that I really love is Thetis Blacker. Do you remember Thetis Blacker? She's an amazing woman. She does batik. And anybody who's interested at Easter time can see all her batik hangings in Winchester Cathedral. Or if you look at the altar cloth in Windsor Castle, you can see the one that she did. And Thetis and I had a bargain. Thetis was interested in death. And so I said to Thetis, listen, why don't we have this bargain that when you're dying, I will make sure I'm at your deathbed and I want a full description. When I'm dying, you must come to me and I'll give you a full description of what the process is like. And we agreed that. And in fact, I was in Japan and I knew she'd gone into a palliative care unit. So I rang the sister and said, I would very much like to talk to Thetis. And the sister said, absolutely not. She's extremely ill. So I said, that's exactly why I want to talk to her. Take the telephone to Thetis and see if she'll talk to me. So the sister saw it as a sort of unusual request, but she did. She took it to Thetis. And this is Thetis' description of her dying process. And that what she saw was rivers of love flowing through her room as she came up to the moment of death. And so for her, it was a wonderful expansion into universal love. And that's what it's like.
Are you having any of those experiences?
Not at the moment.
Are you? I mean, I assume you're really open for them.
Oh, of course. Come along, experience. Let's have it. No, you see, in my lifetime, I've had quite a lot of spiritual experiences, and some when I've become absolutely joined to and fixed with and understanding of the whole of the whole, well, it feels like the whole of the universe and what it's about. So I don't need nudges and pushes at the moment to expand on that.
Yeah, just to, I guess it's about going with the flow of it, isn't it?
Always.
Just to go with the flow. Do you, I mean, now you're at the end of your life or approaching the end of your life, do you feel like there's anything that you'd like to make amends for or you regret, or do you feel really complete with how you've lived and where you're going? Do you feel like you're done?
Well, of course, I'm enormously curious to see if all the theories that I have, in fact, are correct. And I would like there to be tons and tons of light, which there probably will be when I die. And do I regret my life? No, not a bit. I am so thrilled that I have this life. And then, if you like, you can come on to the whole question of the relationship of this planet to you, to individual people. And I'm sure there won't be many of your people listening to this podcast who will understand the fact that you chose it. Mm. You chose it because it's a very difficult planet. There's a lot of conflict on this planet. And so one of the things that you come here to learn about is how to handle conflict. But you chose it. And that will be the point that your audience won't like. Me choose to go to Earth? Yeah, you probably did. That's what it looks like.
Is there anything that you'd just like to say to people who are maybe facing death at the moment, traveling along the same path as you are, or supporting people who are dying? What would you like to say to them?
Don't worry. It's a process which is entirely looked after. Don't fight it. Just enjoy it. And if you can fill the room with light as you go, great.
Perfect place to end. I'm really looking forward to my journey as well. So I'm curious about how yours is going to go.
Mine is going to go fine, because if you watch very carefully, there's very little that you actually do in this world. Most of the things are given. For example, we were up in Scotland and we had to sell our house. Well, we found a buyer for it. And then it was sort of COVID time, so we had to come down to London. And the flat that we're in now was given to us. I mean, not physically, but the fact that our attention was drawn to it. So it was given to us. And this whole process that I'm going through now, is it's not me driven. It is a process which you can follow, and I would advise that, or you can fight. You won't like that.
Peter, thanks so much. I really love talking to you again. It's just been a joy.
And it's been wonderful talking to you too. Thanks very much.
Well, that was the indomitable Dr. Peter Fenwick. My next guest is going to be Dr. Terry LePage, talking about her very topical book, Eye of the Storm, and how we can face climate and social chaos with calm and courage. So Terry and I look forward to seeing you then. Bye for now.